This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, boat, business, motorcycle, whatever it may be. Great people who just care so much about you. Customer service means everything to them. They want to make sure you're fully insured, save you money. Well, gee, who doesn't want that? And that's what they do. All of Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Pat Kraft gets a contract extension through 2032. In fact, Pat on the talk show, I assume, is it WKOK that carries that?
Yes.
Thursday night show?
Yes.
Pat will be the guest on the show Thursday night with James. They'll both be on. So all you got to do now is find a host. Oh, wait. That's me. He gets the extension through 2032. I'm not gonna tell you the text exchange we had. Because you know me. Part serious, part fooling around. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but we're also going to talk about the stadium and what they're doing in there now. So let's talk about Pat getting the extension. First of all, Mr. Tim Curley, we all know what happened around here. We don't have to rehash that. But Dave Joyner and Sandy Barber had to guide Penn State Athletics through that time, which brought with it challenges that had to be dealt with. Simple as that. Okay? Had to be dealt with. Challenges. Okay. Pat comes in. It is now exactly the kind of personality that Penn State Athletics in this era dearly needs. He is somebody that wants to go for it. He wants to find ways to go for it to get them there. Thus, the Jeffrey Field Project. Thus, the training table now for football. Thus, the Beaver Stadium Project. One thing about Beaver Stadium I'm going to say that people, whether you agree with it or not, that certainly is your prerogative whether to agree with this or not. Right. But I have always been a person that when you decide to do something, you might as well go for it and don't band-aid it. And because you don't want to be sitting there 5 to 10 years from now saying, gee, I wish when we did this. How many times have you heard that on projects over the years? I don't care whether it's your own home or whether it happens to be an arena or whatever it happens to be. I wish we had done this back then.
A lot.
And yes, exactly. A lot. And as I said, when the plans were discussed in 2017... I said they need to start this ASAP because it's going to be double the price in 10 years. Well, the price back then was about $450. Now it's $700. At least that's the top out number, $700. So it's not quite double, but we're also not quite at 10 years either. Now, why did I say that at that time? Because one of the guides I used over the years happened to be the Olympic Games projects. They're always overrun on costs. Why? Because they put the bids in usually 7-8 years ahead of time, and prices jump exponentially in 7-8 years when they finally decide to start building this stuff. Well, that's the same. So that's the same logic I applied to here. So if Penn State doesn't do this now, it's going to be well over $1 billion. And there's about $150 to $200 million in back maintenance on this. So essentially the new stuff they're putting in is right around that $500 to $550 range. Okay. And what they're going to do, they've already started it. I decided that Saturday, I just went and watched the scrimmage. Before the practice on Wednesday, I went in, and when you look at it from the street, you can't tell what they're doing from the street. You can't see really anything. You can see they've extended some concourses out in the corners and so forth. You can see that. It's when you go inside and you realize, oh, wait a minute. Okay. In the two eastern corners, there are escalators there. Oh. Helping with traffic flow. I mean, things like that, they're just a big plus for fan movement along the way. That makes a big difference. Now, some people commented on the fencing outside the east side.
They put up a fence.
Okay, they put up a fence. Well, guess what? Guess who would like them to put up a fence? Homeland Security. Okay? Penn State does need to extend the perimeter Beaver Stadium. They really needed to do that for a while. There's a couple reasons. And one of them is the one I just talked about. There are also other things you can do within the perimeter of the stadium if you expand it, in terms of the perimeter of it. What was Pat's last job? Boston College. Okay. And what team plays in Boston? The Red Sox. Fenway Park was built in 1912, rebuilt in 1934. So I've been to that park, I don't know, 50, 75 games, somewhere in there in my lifetime. And when I was younger, we'd go in there and you'd go through the little portals and get in, whether it's the center field bleachers, right field grandstand, behind home plate, whatever it happened to be.
Okay.
Well, now, when Henry and Warner and now Larry Lucchino is no longer with them, when they came in, to their credit, they came up with this idea of expanding the perimeter of Fenway Park. And when you go to Fenway Park now, and you go to Jersey Street, and Jersey Street, it goes from the home plate side down the third base side toward the left field wall, okay? In Yawkey Way, Jersey Street. When I was a kid, it was Jersey Street. Then it was Yawkey Way. Now it's back to Jersey Street again. They have now put the ticketing area to get into the park there. Because guess what? The entry is the width of the street. Well, once you get in, it's a festival in there, which includes the souvenir stands and things, all the stuff that goes with it. And you can casually enter the ballpark wherever you want at that point. You're already through the ticket part. And that's what happens when you expand the perimeter. It gives you more options like that that makes sense, has some logic to it. So there's some reasons behind all this. Plus, I mean, there's a fence around Porter Gardens, for goodness sakes, at Medler Field. Nobody ever complained about that. I don't know. It's a different world out there. Everybody examines a lot of things. So, yeah. let's see. No practice today. And the then tomorrow and Wednesday are the big work days this week. Then you try to do a sharp walkthrough on Thursday, and you got a fast Friday, and then it's on the bus. All the players will be at the game. 80 will be allowed to dress. The 80 that are allowed to dress will go down on Friday. The others who are not dressing will go down Saturday morning. Okay? But only 80 will be allowed to dress. Big Ten game, you're allowed 74. This game, they're allowed to have 80 on the sideline. Okay? And we're going to be talking with Tony Caridi about West Virginia in the next half hour and get his read as the play-by-play voice of the team of what he thinks of this group to this point. Look, they had a good year last year. They went 9-4. They went 9-4. And the quarterback's got a lot of guts. A lot of guts. And as I talked about, I think I talked about this. Did I mention about Andy and being in the Big 12?
Yes.
Last on Friday? Yeah. That's also something nobody else has talked about. Andy knows West Virginia pretty well. Conversely, West Virginia knows Andy. Because of the Kansas thing. Big 12. In the Big 12, you play everybody every year. At least, no, I mean, they don't do that anymore because of the massive expansion. But before that, they were playing against each other every year. So there is a knowledge of Andy for West Virginia and how they go about their business. There's a knowledge of West Virginia and Andy about how he goes about his business. Okay. So. Yeah. It's an interesting time. And I think there's I know Clemson's playing Georgia at the same time as Penn State, West Virginia. But a couple games that do jump out to me that, one, I think I'll be able to see maybe a little bit of, and one I'll be able to see the whole thing. And that would be, a little bit of would be Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I think that's interesting. And the other one is LSU-USC. I think that game in Las Vegas is going to be fascinating. And that's the Sunday night game, I believe. So, this is, it's just fun to talk about games again. I mean, to me, that, you know, it's just fun to talk about games. Ooh, CeeDee Lamb, $136 million deal with the Cowboys.
Wow.
His idea to wait to the very last moment and then give him their money anyway is just strange to me. You could have avoided all this, given him this money 6 weeks ago.
This happens all the time with everybody.
I know.
It's like nobody makes a move until there's pressure to make a move. Can't anybody just casually sit down and say, hey, let's be preemptive and get this done? Now, who knows what his agent's doing, too?
Yeah.
You know, if I can make enough threats, I'll get more money, up the ante, and so forth. how about the history Danny Jansen's making today? Danny Jansen is a catcher for the Red Sox they acquired from the Toronto Blue Jays. They're playing a makeup game. They're playing a makeup game today. And Jansen's going to be in the box score for both teams. A little different.
I saw somebody say earlier this week, what about the poor guy that's been standing on first base at Fenway Park for 41 days?
Hey, you know what? They brought him food. Got him some beverages. It's all good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's it is interesting, though. Yeah. And Jansen, by the way, is in the Red Sox lineup today, playing for them. And so in the game, Cutter Crawford started. Now, Crawford was the losing pitcher, what, yesterday? So in this game, Crawford would have back-to-back starts. Because obviously he's not pitching today. Nick Pivetta is the one that opened the game up for them. But, yeah, it's a little different. One guy, both teams. Very nice. Same game. Very nice. I mean, Justin Turner was the DH the first time around. Turner's now in Seattle. I think Kevin Kiermaier's been dealt too, hasn't he? Yeah. Kiermaier got dealt.
Wasn't it like Joel Youngblood in the late 70s or early 80s that played for the Cubs and the Mets on the same day because they traded him from one to the other when they were in the same series?
Was it the Mets and the Reds, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah, and he did. He played for two different teams the same day. And he flew from one spot to the other. Maybe it was the Mets and the Giants or something, wasn't it? Joel Youngblood. Yeah, that's a good one. Joel Youngblood.
I wonder when the last time Joel Youngblood was mentioned on sports radio.
probably the last time something like this came up.
Yeah.
he definitely did play for two teams in the same day. Joel Youngblood, two teams, same day. August 4th, 1982. First player ever to get to hit for two teams, two cities, same day. Okay. So you go back, okay, 14-year career, mostly undistinguished. It sounds like we're doing the soup biography here. What? Began the day with the Mets, so we got that part right, against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. He went 1-for-2 with two RBIs and a 7-4 Mets win. After the game, okay, we both got the second team wrong. He was traded to the Expos, who played that night against the Phillies in Philadelphia. So, Youngblood gets on a plane, goes from Chicago to Philly, singles as a pinch hitter in the seventh inning, and a 5-4 Phillies win. Two hits for two teams, two cities, same day. Joel Youngblood. Now, you get credit because you had the Mets against the Cubs, and you did mention the Cubs. We both got the Mets part right. We both completely bombed on the Expos.
Yes.
Out of sight, out of mind, currently the Washington Nationals. And he ended up 1-1 that day. The Mets won. He was with the Mets. Expos lost. The Phillies won at 5-4. Joel Youngblood. Mentioned again on sports radio. the MLB put out a piece on him as well. Actually, they put out the piece this month. Story originally ran in January 2021. All right. And he was an all-star the year before. Why would the Mets want to get rid of him? The thought was, do the best you can, roll with the punches, go forward. Right? So he dug in, Wrigley Field, Ferguson Jenkins on the mound. Right? And gets a base hit. Right? So Montreal was short on players in their game in Philadelphia, and they said they really wanted me to try and get there. And knowing the guy I am, I said, sure, I'll do my best. Frank Cashin's the one that made the trade. It was interesting. The trade happened right in the middle of the game. In the bottom of the third inning, after giving his team the lead, Youngblood was pulled off the field because he was now a member of the Montreal Expos and not the Mets. this is kind of like the suit in a beer league softball game. No, we don't want him. You take him. Okay, great. So it was Saturday. So being on a road trip, you're not packed. You got to go change, take a shower, pay your incidentals, get a cab, go to the hotel, pack your stuff, pay your incidentals, go back and get in the cab. There's only one flight I could catch, a 6:05, which is 7:05 in Philadelphia. The game in Philadelphia would start at 7:41. So with an hour and a half flight, the best young player could hope for was an appearance in the later innings. But then in the taxi on the way to the airport, Youngblood realized he had forgotten something pretty important, his glove. He said, "I left my glove on the facing of the stairway at Wrigley Field. I made the cabbie go get my glove. I used that same glove all 14 years in the majors." Having to go back to get his glove, Youngblood's chances of making the flight further dwindled. "I was running, trying to get through security, trying to get to my flight. I figured if I made it, my luggage didn't, so be it." All right? Youngblood did somehow get the flight. His luggage also made it on time, getting to the Philadelphia International Airport, hailing a cab to go to the vet. I think his thing was, "Take me to the big circular dump." The cabbie knew what it was. Okay. "I love the vet." No. He arrived at the ballpark at 9:30 at night. The game was already inching toward the seventh inning. He slipped on a freshly created blue Expo uniform, waved hello across the field to his idol Pete Rose, and 5 minutes later, after already playing in one major league game early in the day and traveling 750 miles, Jim Fanning said, "Youngblood, get up here. You're the hitter." No real warm-ups, no time to think. The new Expo got to the plate against Steve Carlton. Luckily, Youngblood had faced Carlton numerous times, including a few times in the minors, so he felt fairly comfortable hitting off him. Carlton ended up being the pitcher Youngblood faced the most in his career. And Youngblood's one of those guys who could hit him, to be honest with you. One of the eight hits Carlton gave up that day was a Youngblood single up the middle in the seventh inning. One man, two hits, two different teams, two separate cities, one day. It had never happened before, and let's face it, will likely never happen again. All right, we'll take a break. Tony Caridi next half hour on West Virginia Football on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is 43 new Hyundais away from their all-time sales record through August. With 134 new Hyundais to choose from, plus deep discounts and low interest rates, SMC is going to break this record. Sunbury Motors has 48 2024 Tucson's available, starting at $32,568, or get 1.99% financing for 60 months. Looking for the most versatile compact truck on the planet? Take up to $3,000 off the 2024 Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz starts at $31,247, and there's 16 in stock. Here you go, car buyers. SMC has 11 2024 Elantras with 1.99% financing for 60 months. And Elantras start at just $22,960. If you want to have a fun day, you have to buy a Hyundai. We're breaking the record in August with 43 new Hyundais sold. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance.
Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, terrific service department. Inspections, routine, difficult to handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. And I say that not just as somebody because we're so grateful the fact they're a sponsor, but guess what? I'm a customer at Sunbury Motors. All right. With that, we bring in one of the best in the business, the play-by-play voice of West Virginia football and basketball, Tony Caridi. My friend, welcome. Great to have you back.
Hi, Steve. How are you, buddy?
Doing great. Long time no talk. Was it Friday?
Yeah, we got you on this past week to get your insight to what's going on as we get ready to do this thing, huh? Ready to go again.
Yeah. So let's talk about the general atmosphere surrounding this game as a lead-up. Pitt, obviously, the backyard brawl is very special. Is there anything in the Big 12 that approaches in the fans' minds anything of a backyard brawl or a Penn State being there?
No, not really, Steve. I'm just trying to think out loud. Nothing really has taken, and it's a good question. I think sometimes in order to develop a rivalry, as weird as this sounds, like something out of character has to happen, i.e. A bad call, or hey, this team was given a fifth down and you lost the game, or a fight, or something weird, right? And I think that's what builds those kinds of situations, and certainly the backyard brawl for West Virginia and Pitt have had a litany of those types of things which increase the intensity of it. So I think that this game, its uniqueness is that the last time Penn State was here was 92, which is a long time ago, obviously. And I think that since the two teams played so many times, 60 meetings over the course of the many years, that, you know, it's a game that builds excitement. Then you just throw in the mere fact that it's a season opener and everyone is, amped up for a season opener, and West Virginia's coming off a 9-win season. So I think that kind of paints the picture to where we're going this week.
Garrett Green is a player that plays with a lot of guts. He's very talented, but he's also got a lot of guts. Where has he improved in your eyes?
I think it's a good question. I think when we went up there last year, Steve, really the first true road start for him, and to go into that atmosphere, you know, there's a lot going on, obviously, and I think where he has improved is being judicious with the ball. If you take a look, he only threw 4 interceptions in all of last season. He's really a statistical anomaly if you take a look at it. He had higher success throwing the deep ball than he did the short range and the mid-range pass a year ago, and really throws a beautiful deep ball. And so I think going into this season, he's much more confident in the short pass game, the intermediate passing game. And then to add to that, I think he just feels really good about what he can do using his legs. He's a top-end speed guy and can get out of the pocket. He can extend drives. That's really something that WVU did not have in Neil Brown's first 4 seasons. We did not have a quarterback that could make plays with his legs, and that is problematic in today's football. And so he gives them that ability to make a play when a play isn't there. And I think that he'll go into this season feeling better about his arm and knowing that when he needs to go, he can go and make a play.
The running game, the number of times in the offseason that Jack Ham and I have talked about C.J. Donaldson is more than I think you'd realize. So the Donaldson component, but then add in what Jaheim White did in the last half of last season that gave West Virginia a different dynamic.
So that's a great point, because a year ago, Jaheim was not ready to play in this game. They just didn't trust him enough. And as a result of that, he didn't get a single carry. And so it was on C.J. Donaldson. So real quick story just for Penn State fans that don't follow, obviously, on a week-to-week basis as far as what goes on here. So Donaldson converts from a tight end to a running back as a true freshman and has a really, really big-time season. Mm-hmm. And so everyone had high expectations for him last year. And he had a shoulder which nagged him the entire season that could have been operated on in the summer of his freshman year, but he'd already broken his leg, so he didn't want to have two surgeries. So he nurses that thing. So he was okay, but by his own admittance, it was a disappointing year for him. Here comes Jaheim White, you know, about four games into the season, and he explodes, and he starts doing the things where the coaches can trust him to play. And he ended the season just really super red hot. So that gives you, going into this year now, a really unique combination. You've got a small-built running back in Jaheim White who has the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, and he's got speed to break away from people. And then you add in a healthy C.J. Donaldson who did have that shoulder repaired at the end of last season. He didn't play in our bowl game, and he's good to go. So I'm interested, you know, what difference does a Jaheim White make in this game on Saturday, and then what does a healthy C.J. Donaldson look like?
Defensively, the team does have multiple transfers, and it seems like there are a group of them on defense. How interested are you, Tony, to see how they mesh together on defense, especially the transfers in the secondary?
Super interested. I think that's a whole component of the whole season, to be quite honest with you, Steve. We've got a Big Ten transfer in Garnett Hollis, who was a corner at Northwestern, and he'll start at one spot. We have another corner who's going to start by the name of Aiden Garnes, who we played against yet last year when he was at Duquesne. And, in fact, he had a pick in our game against Duquesne, which made West Virginia coaches kind of raise an eyebrow. But he became a heavily sought-after corner when he put his name into the portal. And he's interesting. And so they feel, and this is kind of wild, neither of those two have started yet at WVU, but Neil has said that he's better at corner now than he was a year ago. But it's also a concern. Same situation at safety. You've got some new bodies out there, and you're hoping that they mesh. You know, you go back this past weekend and take a look at Florida State and Georgia Tech, and Florida State had a bunch of really super talented players, but they weren't gelled yet because they came in from different places. And as a result of that, you know, sometimes the continuity and the consistency can beat the talent. And I think overall, West Virginia, especially offensively, returns intact. There's a couple sprinkles of salt that they've added in transfers. But defensively, D-line, solid, good, returning guys, linebackers, guys who have taken a lot of snaps. But that back half of that defense, those safeties and the corners, if you're a Mountaineer fan, you've got to hope, but you don't know exactly what it's going to look like right now.
Yeah, it's not as if, I mean, Penn State's faced Jaheim Joseph before. They faced Hollis before. Conversely, right. Let's get into this interesting dynamic. If there's any offensive coordinator you're going to go up against that knows West Virginia, it's going to be Andy Koltunicki. Conversely, if there's any team that you're going to play in the opener that knows Andy Koltunicki, it's West Virginia because of the Big 12. What are your thoughts on that dynamic?
Well, add another layer to that one. Go back to Koltunicki at Buffalo.
Yeah, no, he talked to me about this, yeah.
When he was at Troy in a bowl game. And Neil, during his press conference this afternoon, said, I called my agents when we had played those guys. And he said, hey, you need to take a look at this guy at Buffalo because he runs really good stuff. And you know, Steve, in coaching circles, whether it's football or basketball, when you say, hey, that guy runs really good stuff, like that's the ultimate tip of the cap of respect from one coach to another. So they're familiar with him. I mean, they've broken down. In fact, Neil today during his press conference talked about how Koltunicki has had past quarterbacks that body-wise and arm strength-wise were similar to Drew Aller. And so they've gone all the way back, and they're looking at that. And that's part of the deal, and that's one of the areas that, you know, everyone, I think, is interested. Penn State fans are interested to see what their new coordinators change and do this season. And then obviously West Virginia is also, you know, intimately wondering out loud what their presence will do, you know, in Saturday's game.
Neil Brown, you brought up his name. A year ago coming into the Penn State game, some people were wondering if West Virginia didn't have the season they had hoped for, that it would be trouble. They ended up going 9-4, and the Houston game had to be crushing for you to call the end of that. I'm still in shock over that one. Neil Brown survives all of this. What has allowed Neil Brown to be a survivor?
Oh, several things. I think, one, he's truly a good person, and I think that everyone around him that deals with him realize that. Two, I think the roster that he inherited from the previous staff was as low on talent as I've ever seen, and I've been here. This will be my 41st season, and each coach, from Don Nealon to Rich Rodriguez to Bill Stewart to Dana Holgorsen, each inherited a minimum of 8 players on the roster that they inherited that went on to play in the NFL. Neil Brown inherited 1, and we just were out of players. The talent wasn't there. Throw in COVID, throw in the genesis of the transfer portal and NIL, and it took longer than anticipated and expected to get into this new world. And I think for the very first time in his 6 seasons now, that you go in to every single Saturday this season and you will be a competitive football team. You've refilled the cupboard with the personnel that you need, that every Saturday you'll compete. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate to every Saturday you're going to win, but we've been playing with one arm behind our back here for about the last 4.5 seasons. It really wasn't until the second part of last year where we got back to where we needed to be. And so I think those are the reasons why, if you were just looking at it, not without your heart, but just looking at it, you know, as to what this dude is about and what he was able to do, you say, keep him going. So I was absolutely thrilled the season that they had, because as you indicated, if it didn't go well, if that thing was about 6 wins last year, he probably isn't here.
Right. For you, Penn State fans haven't been to Mountaineer Field since 1992. You get the best seat in the house every week. To you, what makes that place special?
I think there is an inherent passion for this team that is different than in most places, and I say that in this regard. Firstly, we're a really small state, 1.8 million people, and there are 55 counties in West Virginia, and every county in some way, shape, or form has a commitment to WVU, whether they went to school here, their family went to school here, whatever it might be. The fact that there are no professional teams in this state makes this the professional team. And so the ebbs and the flows, the highs and the lows, truly are felt by the entire state in our sports, in football and basketball, and really in all sports. And so that's what makes it different. So when those people come in, when Mountaineer Nation comes in to the stadium, like they're, the cliche is, you know, you're the 12th man, you're the 12th person.
Yeah.
Like they truly do believe, like, I got to do something here. I got to make a difference in this game. And I think that when that scenario is put in front of them, they do their part. And I think it'll be on full display on Saturday. You know, the perfect world would have been we play this thing at 7:30, and then, you know, it would have been even more electric under darkness. But I don't think there's any question that this thing, even though it's a noon start, it will be extremely intense and extremely emotional, really, from pregame warmups. And so I think it's a classic, you know, kind of what you hope for in college football.
You know, and going back to being around West Virginia myself in the 80s, it was always a thought process, not in football, but this was more of a basketball thing. Can't be in the Atlantic 10. We got to be in the Metro. Can't, you know, or if we're not
right,
in the Atlantic 10, I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not speaking out of turn here. I mean, I think my quotes are pretty close, as you know. Now, the landing spot was the Big 12. Probably maybe the ideal landing spot's the ACC, but that's another discussion. What have the fans thought of the Big 12 as a football-basketball landing spot. And with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, what do they think about the future of it?
I'll answer the second part first. The future of it's really strong because they went out there and they just built their numbers to 16. And so it's hard to blow up a 16-team league. And I think that you were fragile, obviously, if it would have been, you know, if you're at 10 or 12 and you lose three or four, then you're in a difficult situation. So from that regard, they feel comfortable that they're in a position of, okay, we're strong. The other aspect of it is, and I've said this so many times when I talk to Mountaineer fans across the state, the only bad thing about this league, the only bad thing, is the geography.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only bad thing. As far as being in a conference with similar institutions that have similar missions, a lot of state land-grant institutions are in the Big 12 Conference. That's who we are. And so geographically, while you might not think, you know, West Virginia and Kansas State have similarities, like, their fans are our fans. Oklahoma State's fans, Iowa State's fans, Texas Tech fans. You can put them all together. It's the same deal. But unfortunately, up until Cincinnati and UCF came in last year, you just can't get to the games like you used to be able to.
Right.
Our fans love to go to the Pitt game, love to go to the Penn State game, love to go to Rutgers, love to go to Syracuse, love to go to B. You know, it was easy. That's the way that it should be.
Right.
And that's an entirely different story and show that we could do one day, Steve, about how that Eastern League, you know, what would have happened if Pitt and Penn State could have come to an accord. And, you know, and who knows nowadays in this world, but it would have been great to see had we gone off and done that thing. But regardless, it is what it is. And I think that while there isn't any great history or tradition, this will be year 13 for us in this conference. It's a good league and it's good quality competition.
Yeah, I could do that show with you because I actually did a series of interviews with Joe in 1981 about attempting to form that. And then the subsequent interview about the disappointment on his part, it didn't happen. So I could do that show if you wanted with the information behind it.
Let me ask you this: Did he finger Pitt?
It was starting with more Syracuse,
really,
with Jay Crothamel, Boston College, and I'm trying to remember Boston College's AD at the time, but Jay Crotham was the AD at Syracuse.
Oh, yeah.
And they were the ones that talked to Pitt about, hey, why don't you just join us in the Big East? And then the Big East, Dave Gavitt met with Joe at Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks, Connecticut.
Yep.
To talk about maybe Penn State getting into the Big East for basketball. And the no votes ended up being St. John's, Villanova, Seton Hall, and Georgetown.
Stunning, right?
Yeah. You know, Providence was the only basketball-only school that voted yes. But they couldn't have more than three no votes. And they got four. And that's what kept them out. And so, that means it's a long story behind it. But he thought he had it. He thought he had Maryland in it. He thought he had the Fiesta Bowl lined up as an automatic bid.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that he had put a lot of work in trying to check each box as he went along, and he thought he had it. But it was like it wasn't so much him talking about Pitt. He was more angry that Syracuse and BC worked on Pitt to go to the Big East and open the door there than it was Pitt just bagging it. He was more in the Syracuse direction in BC. So.
And isn't that ironic that they ultimately, those two schools are the ones that blew up the Big East because they took off to go to the ACC.
Right, exactly. Then we're going to see what's going to happen with UConn basketball because it doesn't sound like it's a football move.
That's ridiculous. I'm praying that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know. I understand. And look, if you're going to join a conference, you join it for the whole thing. Okay?
Yeah.
And the reason that UConn's not in the ACC is Boston College.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see you Saturday. We'll talk off the air for a little bit about a couple things. And
sure.
We'll Absolutely. Go from there, because I think I saw a request that, yeah, can we talk?
Yeah, all I yearn is the back to the old days. Can I get a depth chart? This is just a guy looking for a depth chart.
We'll do that. Tony, thanks so much. I'll see you Saturday. We'll talk here shortly.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, Steve.
You bet. Tony Caridi, the great play-by-play voice of West Virginia football, basketball, and great to have you with us on the show today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is 43 new Hyundais away from their all-time sales record through August. With 134 new Hyundais to choose from, plus deep discounts and low interest rates, SMC is going to break this record. Sunbury Motors has 48 2024 Tucson's available, starting at $32,568, or get 1.99% financing for 60 months. Looking for the most versatile compact truck on the planet? Take up to $3,000 off the 2024 Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz starts at $31,247, and there's 16 in stock. Here you go, car buyers. SMC has 11 2024 Elantras with 1.99% financing for 60 months. And Elantras start at just $22,960. If you want to have a fun day, you have to buy a Hyundai. We're breaking the record in August with 43 new Hyundais sold. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.